Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
And here we are. It is another Thursday evening in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks, California, overlooking the high school, which is Notre Dame High. And we're on the fourth floor of the Sherman Oaks Tower.
I know. But even more attractive out there is that 76 ball.
I know, huh?
Yeah.
It's okay to have a ball. Just didn't need to have 76 on it. Hi, Russ.
Hey, Crispy. How are you?
Well, this is The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host. The smart ass on the other side of the desk is Russ Avison, who, of course, is here every fourth Thursday. And he is making reference, of course, to what I discussed last week and burning myself and blowing myself up with black powder. So have all the fun you want, Russ.
It's
all yours,
to.
Pal.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. And, of course, The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, the nice folks at Black Dog. If you're a new writer or want to know how to navigate your way through the system, give us a call. We'd be happy to help you out. The number is 805-795-3165. And, of course, we're also sponsored by Out West, which is your online source for top brands that are reflective of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, including Scully Leather, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Their number is toll-free at 877-340-9378, and their website is www.scvoutwest.com. And, of course, our good, good, good friends at Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. They go to great lengths to secure the most competitive rates possible. TFM also provides unmatched customer support from their dedicated truckload division. In an effort to streamline their customers' overall shipping efficiency, TFM provides real-time updates on all lanes. Call TFM today at 844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And when you call, talk to Mike Petruski. The guy's awesome, and he's a really, really good guy and knows his stuff. And, of course, if you're an LTL shipper, we know you're looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today. You won't be disappointed.
So let me ask you, LTL is less than a truckload.
Less than truckload.
Is there something called FTL for full truckload?
Well, it's just full truckload.
It's just...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it's just a full truckload.
I just like acronyms.
Yeah, I know. Well, everybody does. That's why they use them. Okay, tonight's guest she's a repeat. She's actually, it was one of the more fun guests we had last year. She was on in August of 2016. She's back tonight with a new book, and she's one of our favorites. She's just a fun lady and a great writer, and really a great writer. We really enjoyed her stuff. She's a Texas-based author. Her name is Kathleen M. Rogers. She's a former frequent contributor to Family Circle magazine and Military Times. Her work has also appeared in anthologies published by McGraw-Hill, University of Nebraska Press, Potomac Books, Health Communications, Inc., AMG Publishers, and Press 53. In 2014, Kathleen was named a distinguished alumna from Tarrant County College Northeast Campus. Three of her aviation poems were featured in a new exhibit at the Cradle of Aviation Museum on Long Island, New York. She is the author of the award-winning novel, The Final Salute, the novel Johnny Come Lately, and now she has put out her new book, which is called Seven Wings to
Glory.
Oh, Glory. Yeah. Seven Wings to Glory. And,
boy, you looked over at me and you suddenly lost all your thoughts.
I did. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the hair. The curly blonde hair.
Just, yeah.
It's not.
I'm cute, huh?
Something's off. Anyway, would you please welcome to the writer's block for her second appearance, and hopefully not her last, Kathleen Rogers. Kathleen, are you
Thank
with us?
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm here, and I'm here with about a half a truckload of brain.
You're the good girl. You're a good girl. And if you want to call and talk to Kathleen tonight, last week we had a couple callers. The number here is 818-602-4929. Again, get your pencils. 818-602-4929. And you can call and you can talk to Kathleen all by yourself. Won't that be fun? Because we're going to talk to her anyway. So, I finished your book today.
Okay.
I did. I loved it.
Thank you. Thank you for reading it.
Oh, well, I have to read it. I mean, how can I talk about it if I don't read it? It's like
it's
Johnny
nice
Come Lately.
To come on a radio show where the hosts have actually read your work. It doesn't always happen, and so it's really nice.
No, it is. Actually, a lot of times producers read it and put little thumbnails in there to point talking points.
Right. You know, it's kind of, have you ever been listening to movie reviews, and somebody will say, well, you know, this XYZ movie, I haven't had a chance to see it, but I heard it's really good.
Yeah. I try not to watch movie reviews because I tend to believe the reviewer, and I'd rather make my own decisions.
All right, so let's talk about this book. Kathleen, I did read it, too, so say thank you to me also.
But, thank you so much, Russ. Thank you. And I'm bowing right now.
Okay. As well you should, because, you know, we are talking to the Russ Avison.
That's right. Okay. That's right. I want to tell you that I do the show just once a month. So how long have we been doing this? Almost 2 years?
2 years.
Okay.
Next month, actually.
All right. So I've had to read about 24 books just for the show. And yours is the first book that not once, not twice, but probably four or five times had me get tears in my eyes.
Oh, you know what? I love it. I love it when men cry when they read my work.
Well, we would never tell you unless you're on the radio, so we're going to tell you now.
Thank you. That means, you know, I go for the emotional impact, whether it's laughing, crying, you know, it's the emotion. That's where I think I'm gifted. I may have weaknesses in other areas, but that means a lot to me that it touched you on certain levels.
Oh, it did. Well, you know, well, maybe you don't know this, but I'm a dog trainer, and I have a ranch where we have a dog boarding facility. And I've been involved intimately with dogs for a long time. So all of the issues that came up with brother dog and all that really touched me. But then
well, that's how you and Jim met. Weren't you Jim's dog? Weren't you his dog trainer?
See, you remember.
You're good.
Well, of course.
Yes, he was my dog trainer. Well, actually, he was my trainer. You had to train the person before
he taught
the
you,
dog.
Right, Jim?
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
And believe me, he had a handful with me.
I still do.
He still does.
That's why I'm only here once a month.
There's three dogs in the story, as you well know. There's Brother Dog, the main star.
Right.
And then there's a dog named Hallelujah, Hal.
Right.
He
Hal.
Comes on.
Right.
Briefly.
Right.
And he has an important role.
Yes, he
and
does.
And then there's Lady Bird.
Right, right. And Lady Bird was, you know, Brother Dog picked Lady Bird to show up at their house. Or at least.
Yes, and that just gave me chills and goosebumps of the best kind.
There you
because
go.
I believe it. I've lived it, you know, in different ways. And we all of us dog lovers know that sometimes we are sent gifts.
That's right.
From other dogs.
That's right.
In fact,
yes.
And without giving anything away, but the way you find out about how that went about, why Brother Dog had done that part, that was one of the parts that
teared
me up.
That was really a poignant piece of your book.
And thank you, Russ and Jim. And I don't want to give that away, but I struggled when I first came up with the idea. And for anyone who hasn't read it, please read it. But I struggled with the idea of what would happen, and I realized it had to happen. And because it happens in real life with people, and it's happened, and it was not easy to do, and I cried when I wrote it, and my big old blubbering retired fighter pilot cried too when I was working on that scene. So, of course, he's older now, so he's allowed to cry. You know, once you get past 40.
Past 40.
And you're a man, then
you,
it's okay.
You threw that one out awfully fast.
You wanted to make all of us seem okay.
it was, I think, crucial to the plot.
Uh-huh.
I could have, without, you know, really giving away any spoilers, I could have taken the easy road, and I realized, no, I had to take something that was very hard to do, and I think anyone who reads the novel and they read it all the way to the end, I think they'll be rewarded.
Well,
that was my hope.
I wanted to ask you, because you just mentioned that you cried when you were writing that. Is that a common thing for you, that as you write, you get emotionally tied in and it really affects?
Absolutely, Russ. Thank you. If I'm not crying or laughing or getting goosebumps or disgusted and want to kill someone, if I'm not feeling what the character's feeling, then I'm sitting there going, okay, this sucks. This is not working. And, you know, as Goose said in Top Gun, you know, let's go to truck driver school or whatever. But I think for me, if I'm not feeling the emotion as I'm writing, then it's not going to come across to the reader. So I have to, like, if I'm an actress, I have to get into character.
Sure.
I may not dress the part.
Sure.
But I have to get into that character. I have to get into their heads.
Uh-huh.
Even if I'm not writing from that viewpoint, and say I'm writing from my protagonist, Johnny Kitchen, and she's talking to one of the new characters in this book, Roosevelt Hill, I still have to kind of know what Roosevelt might be thinking, even though Johnny is the one talking, and we see the scene through her viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because I oftentimes kill characters off in my books that people have grown to love over the series. And mm-hmm. because, you know, it happens in real life, just as you just said. It does happen in real life, and don't soft pedal it. It happens. You have to address it.
You have to address loss in you know, if you're a novelist, and because it does. I mean, we all experience it.
Right. Right. My unfortunately, the bookie, incidentally, she says hi.
Hello, Jerry.
The bookie's sister, the Wiz, reads my books, and then she calls me, and then she yells at me for killing people off. Why'd you have to kill him off? He was really a good character. Yes, but people die.
Oh.
You know.
Because it's usually, in real life, those people that are so good.
Right.
You know, and who did that song, Only the Good Die Young?
Billy Joel.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, it's not just young, youth, but truly, we all experience loss. And one of my dearest friends, Rhonda Revels, Rhonda, I don't know if you're going to listen to this, but Rhonda told me one time, she came over to chat after work, and she was sitting there dissecting, picking out certain themes in all of my novels. And at first it freaked me out, and then I thought, oh, wow, she's right. She was finding things in The Final Salute, Johnny Come Lately, and now Seven Wings to Glory, even though The Final Salute's a whole separate story than Johnny Come Lately and Seven Wings to Glory. I tend to revisit some of the same things, and I'm doing it again in the new novel I'm writing. So,
well, when you write in a series, you write the same people in there, and you almost have to go back and remind readers of things that have happened. And the previous novels, just to kind of bring people up to speed on where you are now.
Right. However,
the
other part of it is that regardless of, I mean, if you bring something back from another book, the idea that bringing it back, you touch on it, but the new readers who've never read anything else before, they don't feel left out. I've noticed that there were a few places in this book where you did relate to things that happened like several years earlier, but it was just enough to say, okay, well, this is a situation that had happened before, but I don't think I would have felt left out had I not read the other book.
Right.
Oh, thanks, Russ. And I'll tell you, the whole time I was writing Seven Wings to Glory, the whole time I said to myself, okay, I'm going to write this as a standalone novel for anyone trying to get new readers if they've never read Johnny Come Lately.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, and Jim, you know this in writing, whether, you know, it's what to leave in, what to leave out on any kind of backstory. And then I realized one day my husband said, okay, while you're writing Seven Wings to Glory, think about Johnny Come Lately. That whole novel is backstory. And so then it's like, okay, what to bring certain readers up to speed who know Johnny Come Lately,
mm-hmm.
and then how to bring new readers to my work into this new story if they've never read Johnny Come Lately. And it was a, I had to really juggle, but I think I pulled it off. I mean, I'm not trying to say that with any kind of ego, because it was dadgum hard work. But I'm hoping I did. And Russ, thank you for saying that.
Well, it's a good solid story on its own. But I do like the fact that you go back and make reference to things that happened, like for instance, her grandmother that had the bakery in her house.
Granny Opal.
Yep, Granny Opal, and you make reference to her, and then of course, well, I'm not going to go. No spoiler alerts, I promise, Kathleen.
Okay.
But anyway, you do make reference to things that happened in the prior stories, and I like that, and I like the fact that you bring them forward, you bring us forward to a point where okay, everybody should be up to speed now.
And Jim, when you bring up Granny Opal, what we could be talking about right now. Any of us in our own lives, if we're talking about loved ones who've gone on and crossed over, in our hearts and our minds, we could be walking through the hallway, we could be in a grocery store, we could be driving down the road, anywhere, 1,000 miles away from where we grew up,
mm-hmm.
a song comes on, a
yep.
smell, and all of a sudden, that loved one could be sitting right next to us, even though physically they may not be there. If you tap in which I'm not trying to get all weird, but I truly believe there are times when I've tapped in to my late father or my late brother who I dedicated my novel to, and I just want to say his name out loud,
sure.
Larry Lynn Doran. He was 11 days away from turning 21, and he passed from this life in 1983, and when I first decided to start writing novels, I thought one day I want to write a novel and dedicate it to my little brother, but it was never the right time. And then all of a sudden, Seven Wings to Glory came up, and that was the novel
mm-hmm.
to dedicate
mm-hmm.
to him.
I find that the title intriguing, and I that's the only problem I had with this book was the title, in that I never really caught where it came from.
I think I know.
Oh, okay.
And again, I don't want to be a spoiler alert, but there was
okay.
several times in the book where there was a collection of seven people.
That's yeah. Okay. Okay. Is. Yeah. Okay.
That's
now
all I
want to
say
okay.
about it. But that was it.
My bad. Yes.
Hey, Jim.
Hey.
Pop quiz. You just got an F. No, I'm joking. Rush, you got an A+. But no, I'm joking.
Thank you.
The novel. The title. Russ and Jim. Guess what? The title. Guess where I got it. I got it February 2013. Don't ask me the day of the month. But the only reason I remember the year, my husband Tom was still flying for American. I jolted out of bed at 3 a.m. with Seven Wings to Glory waking me up in my... Okay, it woke me up from a dream, the words. And my husband was walking out in his airline uniform going to work at 3 a.m. for American Airlines. And I said, oh, my God, Tom, Seven Wings to Glory. What do you think? Doesn't that sound like a really cool novel? And he agreed, said, you better write it down and then go back to sleep. Okay, later that morning, I got back up, and my dog, Bubba, was still alive, my chocolate lab. I got up. Tom was off flying around, whatever. Got up, made my coffee. I opened up the newspaper, and there in the headlines, it was the 10th anniversary of the space shuttle blowing up over East Texas.
Sure.
Now, what I knew was, here's the thing. My heart started racing, and my first thought was, oh, my God, wait, Seven Wings to Glory. How many astronauts were on board?
Seven.
There were seven astronauts on board the space shuttle.
Right.
Now, I knew that day, it gives me goosebumps, I knew that was not my story to tell. Other people, better writers, can tell the real story of what happened in that tragedy. But I'm not trying not to get weird, but I felt like that was a sign or a gift, whatever you want to call it. And to me, to open up the newspaper, that was validation or whatever. There were seven astronauts on board. I wake up with the title Seven Wings to Glory. And then I thought it thinking, wait, I've already written the first novel as a fighter pilot novel about airplanes and mm-hmm. pilots. What's this wings thing? And then I just let the character start speaking to me in the story. And I believe in my heart, between Johnny Come Lately and Seven Wings to Glory, and I love Johnny Come Lately, I'm not, but I think Seven Wings to Glory is the stronger of the two.
I agree. I enjoyed it more.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. And I'm also a Purple Heart recipient and a Vietnam veteran. So.
Oh wow, Jim. You know what? I don't think I knew that. I knew you were a Vietnam veteran, but I did not know about the Purple Heart.
Yep.
Oh my God, he wears
wow,
it in here.
Wow, that
everywhere.
Means a lot.
I have it actually stamped on my forehead.
And I'm not. I just realized I have to, like, I'm zipping my lips, because I have to be careful. But that Purple Heart, of course, you didn't, you know, like, want it.
No, nobody wants one. You know,
right.
It's like
exactly.
You know, they give it to you, and you go, I'd rather not have a bullet hole in me.
Right.
But hey.
And you know, you didn't want anyone to bake you a bakery cake and balloons.
No.
And throw a party.
No. No.
Okay.
No. I was good.
But I thank you and I respect your service.
Well, thank you. But back to your book. I thought your capture of veterans in general was very well done.
Thank you.
And because they are a lot of veterans are in big, deep trouble now. And it's unfortunate, and you've really kind of touched on that, and it makes me it made me feel sad, I guess.
Yeah, I, you know, Jim, because you've read the novel and Russ, there are things I wrote in there for readers who haven't read it. But I'm not a veteran. I'm married to a veteran. I have a son that's a veteran. My father was a veteran. My husband's. We're just a long military family. But what I tried to capture there is what I felt, and I gave it to Johnny Kitchen, my character, what it felt like for me as this, you know, suburban mom living here in this suburb in Fort Worth, Texas, not having to really worry about my next meal, okay? And then I have this son who's in college at Texas Tech, and he calls me one day when he's 22 and says, I just left the recruiters. And I said, the recruiter? What recruiter? He goes, I'm going to join the Army. And my first thing was, no, let someone else's family serve. Our family's given enough. And that's when he said, I'm 22 years old. It's my decision. And then I'm like, okay, we'll just finish college first, which he did. He went to basic training at Fort Leonard Wood, got his slot to OCS, Officers Candidate School, and went on, and then went to war. But veterans kind of get the shaft at times. They get a lot of lip service in our country, and we can do so much better for our veterans.
We can.
And our military families, our spouses, our children.
We can. I agree mm-hmm. with that. Totally. Totally. So when you decided that you were going to write Seven Wings to Glory, oh, incidentally, I don't think you're crazy because of I actually came up with a novel that I'm writing right now that was in a dream that I had. And when I woke up,
exactly.
it was still
mm-hmm.
there. And the title,
it was right there, wasn't
the
it?
The title was still there. And that dream mm-hmm. got me through chapters 1 through 6 or 7.
Oh, Jim, I believe in that. While you were asleep,
yep.
Your spirit, your mind, whatever, was tapping into something, I believe, bigger.
I wasn't sleeping very well, apparently, but I was sure writing a book at the time.
So. Well, and tossing and turning. Sometimes that's where we are. That's where I'll get up in the middle of the night and I'll go, okay, crap. Okay, I got to go fix that scene. You know, oh, I can't sleep.
I never do that.
Oh.
Do you know
well, I don't do it very often, but when I do, it's like my muse is saying, you know what, that's not working.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Okay, I'm not a writer, but I've also found that for different creative reasons, whatever it might be, we tap into that time when our brain is supposedly
mm-hmm.
sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
As a hobby, I like to play ice hockey, and I do that every week. And I find that sometimes as I'm drifting off to sleep, I might be thinking about a particular move to make on the ice. And it must cogitate around while I'm sleeping, because the next day and I'll go to play hockey and I'll attempt that move and be successful with it. And I'd never tried it until I thought about it and did that. And I think it's all about that. You know, if you visualize it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's
yeah.
the same thing with your writing. It's just we all have different places
mm-hmm.
that we
mm-hmm.
utilize that energy that we can draw from the subconscious.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you, Kathleen, I woke up and the title of this book was imprinted in my brain, and it wouldn't go away. So I knew I had mm-hmm. something, and it's just a simple. It's a name is all it is. It's the name of the book is Jonah Blue.
Oh, I love that name.
I know. Me too.
It has a ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It has a nice ring to it.
And, you know, he's a 10-year-old kid that runs away from his farm in 1830. His farm is in Canton, Ohio, and he winds up living with a mountain man in the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, I already like his character.
And he learns all about it. He learns everything. So, anyway.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Well, a comment and a question. The comment, Johnny and her husband Dale.
Yes.
I found that the descriptions of the relationship in this book were far more poignant than in the previous book.
Yeah, I did too.
And I found it actually making me think about my relationship and how important it was to me, because there's a line, I think, in the book where you talk about, and Johnny looks at her husband and she says, he's a damn fine man or something
yeah.
like that.
And yes.
It's really, I mean, the relationship is very important in this book, and you see it. And so what I wanted to ask you is, when you come up with the story, do you, mm-hmm. I mean, I know everything we think about has to come from our lives. I mean, mm-hmm. that's our experiences.
Right, and our experiences, right.
Mm-hmm. Right, but do you specifically, like for a character or possibly part of a story, do you search out an experience or a story or something, a person that you know, and draw them in? Or do you just kind of create these things and it's just the compilation of a lot of things that you've experienced?
Russ, all of the above. It's like I take my own experiences, people I know. I mean, that's how I write fiction. I don't really know how to explain it. You know, any fiction writer who says, oh, well, none of my fiction's based on anything that I've lived, I don't believe them. Nah. I think they're liars. Of course, we're all liars who write fiction, but anybody that writes a novel is going to draw. I don't care if you're writing a novel set in, you know, 3,000 years from now, but you're still, we're all human. We're human, and there's universal themes. And we all tap into those same things. So, to answer your question, Russ, really, it's kind of a mixed bag. I take it all, you know, whether I've actually personally been through it or someone I know, a family member, a close friend, a reading something somewhere. It's I just kind of tap in, and again, it's trying to get the emotion. And anybody who's lived past a certain age, you know, we've all
40. We'll say 40.
We'll say 40. Yeah, 40 is a good one.
That was a good one you mentioned before.
And you know, there is no perfect relationship. However, whatever kind of relationship people are in, you put two human beings together, and there's going to be tension and conflict, and you don't wake up together every day and just, oh my God, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's like, I've been with you for 30 something years, and you know. No, truly, it's or can you stop chewing your gum a certain way? You know, I'm being silly, but really, there's just,
not so much.
No.
Yeah.
Could you not breathe like that,
yeah.
please?
Can you stop snorking right in the middle of General Hospital?
Yeah. You know, you're snoring louder every year. You know, something like that. But seriously, I try to be true with the relationships, in that there's no perfect relationship. And I look at couples who have lasted or try to work through, and there are times when it just doesn't work out, and sometimes people are better off, you know, for themselves or their children or their mental health. But I really did. Dale, Johnny's husband, I've loved him from the beginning. I think he is a very patient man, especially in Johnny Come Lately. And he's my hero, I guess. And Dale's not perfect, though.
No.
Because in Johnny Come Lately, you know, Dale wanted to hang on to some things. He was angry, and he had every right to be. but he didn't want to forgive as quickly. You know, he kind of wanted to hang on to that for a while.
Mm.
Which is one of those parts that you brought into Seven Wings of Glory.
Right.
You mentioned that.
You linked those two together.
Issue. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember writing, I believe it's in you may be referring to chapter 4 or 5, Dale and Johnny are in the kitchen early one morning.
Yes.
Not
going to
give away anything.
Right.
But
and,
I love the way you did that, by the way.
Yeah, that's actually kind of cool.
Did you?
Yes, I did. In fact, I'm going to tell you this is absolute truth. Today, when I was driving to the studio, I happened to call Karen on the phone, and I was chatting, and I mentioned that particular scene to her. We talked
about
it today. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Is that Russ? You're telling me that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Russ. And
okay.
So tell me, Russ, did Karen start laughing?
No. When I asked her, I said, because if you remember, the scene in the kitchen, and then...
It's about 6:30 in the morning.
Right.
But then later on that day... I think they
there's
were.
There's no curtains in the window.
Right.
But later on in the day, there's a mention that Dale comes into the room and he's got a little extra pep in his step, and Johnny looks over and says she was responsible.
She was responsible for that. Yeah.
And I told that to Karen. That's exactly what I mentioned to her. And I said, "Do women think like that?" And she goes, "I tend not to overthink too much."
Yeah, but as a writer, you kind of have to work stuff in. But I will tell you this. That chapter that we're all talking about, and for any readers that might be listening in or people who haven't read the book, there is a scene. My couple's been married a long time. They're in the kitchen at 6:30 a.m. in the morning, and they have a son at war. And so what happens there in that kitchen stays in that kitchen.
Well,
yes.
Not necessarily.
It does.
Now it's in print all over the United States.
You know, I'll tell you what. I'm not going to mention any names, but someone that I'm no longer associated with slammed me for that scene and tried to make it something that it wasn't, and then later on my publishers loved it. It passed my copy editors, my publishers, my readers that I've heard from, and now to hear you two guys tell me that scene worked. And then the following chapter, I think it was that night when Dale was grilling pork chops.
Correct. That's it.
You know, and it's just a nice little vignette that's kind of thrown in the middle of a maelstrom.
Yeah, and it was so tastefully done.
Very well done.
And thank you. And I'm going to tell you, not to get corny, I cried when I wrote the end of that scene because I'm not going to give it away. But I will say that you bring people together that send a loved one to war, and things that, and I know this firsthand, sending... And Jim, you went, but I know from someone staying back on the home front, when you send a loved one to war, there's a lot of stuff day to day that doesn't really matter anymore. Because when you're sending a loved one to war and they're in a war zone, everything else kind of fades out. And what's really important comes to the forefront.
Well, I know that brother dog got an eyeful that morning, so.
Actually, he was outside. But that night, I believe brother dog got a little taste of the grilled pork chops, if I'm not.
He did, that's right.
And by the way, brother dog is also, besides Dale, brother dog is one of my most favorite male characters in
absolutely.
The book.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. He's the spirit of both books, really.
Yeah, I get that. I have one of my characters that I write about. His name is Jeff Stryker. He's a young kid. He when he was younger, he picked up this Comanche war pony, and that was his favorite horse. That was the horse he absolutely loved because the horse was fast, smart, able to do whatever he needed him to do, and he was a paint horse. And his friend asked him one day, did you name him Waco because he's crazy? And he goes, no, I named him Waco because that's where we live.
Waco, Texas.
That's funny.
Well, that's
I love
it. That's where they were from was Waco. So he named his horse Waco. But his horse went with him through 4 books. And he finally, of course, got killed. And you know, you kill off animals, too. I totally agree with that. And they always live on because they always remember them. They're never really gone. Even my Rottweiler that I had for years and years and years, she's never gone. She's always there.
What was her name?
Brittany.
Brittany, okay. And you have a dog now.
I do. Her name is Bella.
Bella, that's right. And then Russ was Russ Bella's or Brittany's trainer?
Bella. Well, Jim, actually.
Bella.
But
Jim's trainer for Bella.
Okay.
You know, the second night I met Russ, there was a rattlesnake underneath my chair.
That's right.
Yeah.
In the house?
No. Out at a training field.
Yeah, right on the that white chair. That is right.
It was curled up right behind the left rear leg of the chair.
Yeah. I remember because I got a stick and I took it
in
the big trash can.
We put it in the big trash can.
Walked it like a half mile away and dumped it.
All I saw was I had this puppy here on a short leash and I looked down and there's this rattlesnake curled up and I came out of that chair 900 miles an hour and screaming, "Snake!"
Yeah. God, I'd forgotten about that.
Now, Jim, that would be a funny scene in a novel.
I'm not big on rattlesnakes.
Especially for anyone that has snake phobias.
Well, I just actually in Jonah Blue there is a snake scene. There's two of them.
Oh, okay.
It's great. Balls Creek is the one whoever reads Jonah Blue is going to love that story.
And I love that name, Jonah Blue.
Yep, Jonah Blue.
Okay, I have a – I don't know how I want to – okay, I'm going to tell you, Kathleen, honestly, I sat down to read this book. And I had to start five different times.
Okay,
this led me to this question that in – And by the way, I want you to know, I thoroughly enjoyed the book. It was great, and I would highly recommend it. And I wouldn't say that if I didn't believe that. But it brings me to this question. I know that in television shows, in movies, there's kind of a formula that you follow that keeps the character or keeps the audience going along with it, and then you have to have some sort of resolution at the end.
Yes.
And somewhere, you know, about two-thirds of the way in, you know, you crescendo with all the action or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in the book, do you follow any kind of guide and possibly, I don't want to use the word manipulate, but design it in such a way that it works to keep somebody active with it?
Well, I try to kind of follow the hero's journey, you know, the call to action, the inciting moment, the call to adventure. I mean, that's what I try to do. I took some writing classes years ago at SMU in Dallas, and we studied the hero's journey and the archetypes and the characters. But I do. I try to follow that narrative arc, and, you know, I do try to follow that. So, when you said you had a hard time getting into it, was it just getting oriented to the story, or...
I'm just being honest with you because I love the book and I think you're an awesome writer, but that first chapter it didn't grab me, and I just couldn't get motivated with it. But finally, I said, okay, I've got to do this, and I did, and I got through the first chapter, and then you sucked me in, and then I couldn't read it fast enough because it was the story.
Wow.
And the other thing that I noticed too is that you take there's like three or four different. Issues that are being followed in the book. We know they've got the one son that's gone off to war.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we have the issue with the racism in their town.
Yeah.
We have the issue with the daughter having the accident and the issues with the dog. So I mean, there's a lot of different things you're kind of following through, and then of course our seven wings.
Right.
We're kind of wondering what is that about. So
and there's two different sets that if you. Without giving away any spoilers, the references to the seven. Mm-hmm. There's two different sevens.
Actually, there's three. I think wasn't there one having to do with the dog too?
Now she's going to have to go back and reread it.
I don't want to give it away. I don't want to give away what it is. But yes, you're right. It's several times. We'll say there's at least two times.
At least twice. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to challenge you. Wrote the book.
Oh, I see what you're saying about the dog. Yes, 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 yes. That's the first time that shows up. Yes.
I just found it. I found it a refreshing read, much as I did Johnny Come Lately.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And you know, I debated on how to open the book, and the reason I did open it the way I did, with the Kitchen family sending their son Cade to war, is that's what really moved me to even want to write this story, along with the racial issues. My goal as a writer, and the fourth novel I'm writing is totally separate, has nothing to do with any of these books. It's a brand new story, and I wanted to get away from the military. And yet, one day I was driving somewhere, and bingo, there it was. I cannot, every time I write a new book, I'm trying to get away from the military. It's in my blood. And so the new novel, the fourth novel, will have a military theme. There's other themes in it. But the reason I think I end up, that I continue to write about the military in my contemporary fiction, is I think today our military, they do so much, I don't think get enough credit, and I think so many people drive around in this country, and this sounds judgmental, and I don't mean to, but I think they kind of take our military for granted. And, you know, you can pull into a McDonald's and get your lunch. You can go see a movie. You can go and plop down, you know, $200,000 for some kind of cosmic car if you have the money. But who's defending our freedom for you to do that, you know? And there are over 7,000 Americans that are no longer with us, that were with us or weren't even born yet before 9/11. And there is a Gold Star mother, and I want to mention her by name tonight, Beth Carlson. She's mentioned in my acknowledgments page. Beth, I've never met her in person. She's become a good friend. She's helped. She's taught me the sacrifices. Her oldest son, Warren Hansen, he was killed in 2003, two helicopters over Iraq. And I also had another Gold Star mother send me a message the other night. Her name is Kay Nelson Kastner, and her son, Stephen, was killed in 2006. So she read Seven Wings to Glory, and when I got the Facebook message, oh my gosh, I lost it, because my son came home, and I'm not going to give away in this book what happens with the son in this book. But our military do so much. So I'm starting to get on a soapbox, I realize.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Our military, our returning veterans are given a raw deal in this country. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. To think that the healthcare system alone that we have for the military is subpar, and this is what we offer. I mean, and I'm not saying the doctors are bad or anything. It's just the way the system is working. And when people have to wait 3 and 4 months to get some sort of
an appointment
to go get some help that they need today. Right. And there was an article on NPR just the other day. 21 military people kill themselves every single day.
I read that.
Yes.
I read that.
Yes, and it's... you know, having veterans, it's a worry. And, you know, they come back, the ones that come back, they may be beautiful young men or young women or whatever, and nothing on the outside, but all their scars may be internal.
Well,
okay.
I can get behind that.
And also, it's like none of us, we all want to be viewed as strong people, and nobody wants to show weakness in, you know, whatever areas in our lives. And I think veterans, that's particularly, you know, they don't want to appear weak when they come back, whether they're still active duty or, you know, go ahead and get out and get, you know, go into the civilian marketplace. And
well, one of these days, I'd love to sit down and have a conversation with you about this, because I have my own feelings on the point. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you have definitely brought up some salient points, and I will give you the 3 stars that goes on top of your book.
The 3 stars.
The 3 stars, and well, yeah, that's just for content. The other the other 2 stars are because we love you and because it's a good story.
All right.
Hey, one last question, because I know we're getting close to the end of the hour. But now that you're writing your fourth book, do you find that the process gets easier as you go forward?
Oh, Lord, no. It's the process has always been difficult for me. I've been writing, I'll be 59 in October. I've been writing since I was 15 at the high school newspaper in Clovis, New Mexico, and I'm going to go home in May. I'm getting a big award from the Clovis Municipal School Foundation for my writing career, so that's a huge honor because that's where my roots started. But every time I sit down to write, I mean, it's still, it's hard. Yes, these stories come to me. Yes, the characters are speaking to me, but it's still work. And to write, and to write well, and to write for publication, you know, you have to get the story down, and revision's the key. You know, you can get some drafts of a scene down, but it's the constant, it can wake you up at 3 or 4 in the morning, and you can fight it, but then it's like, okay, wait, that character shouldn't be saying that. I actually, that dialogue, that belongs to this other character, or no, that's not a good, that's crappy. And a lot of times what I do is I write, I call it writing surface. What that means is I get something down, and then I get to the meat of the real story, and the issues, and the tension, and the conflict. And that doesn't happen usually, you know, on the first pass. It takes time.
Mm-hmm. Is that work and, the same way with you, Jim? Mm-hmm.
And I think every writer has their process, and that's what I'm learning the longer I'm at this gig, is that we all have a different process, and nobody's process is right or wrong. It's just we have to learn to respect our own process.
Right. So what works for you is right.
Mm-hmm.
If Billy Bob Thornton's way of writing doesn't work for you, then it's not right for you. Your
right.
way would be right for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we get that. Well, look, give us an email address where we can get a hold of you, or our listener can get a hold of you. Email address, website, Facebook page, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, well, let's see. If my website's www.kathleenmrogers.com, and it's R-O-D-G-E-R-S.
Right.
And if you just Google Kathleen Rogers, Kathleen M. Rogers, and something will come up. Hopefully it's all good.
Well,
but something will come up.
Yeah, I did that, and then there was a picture of a bathroom stall with your name and phone number on it. So.
Oh, Lord.
We're teasing.
Oh, my goodness.
Kathleen. But, okay, so, and look, I'd like to formally invite you now on the first week in September. We're having a two-hour show. And we're going to be talking
okay.
about agents and publishers, and love to
yes.
have you on board. And I'm sure you have your own ideas.
I would love to be part of that. And again, I've been writing a long time. I signed with a new agent late January,
mm-hmm.
and she took me on basically on a wing and a prayer, if you will, on a book that I'm just writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to share a little bit of that. And, you know, there's all kinds of ways for people to get published
Absolutely.
Nowadays.
Absolutely.
And it's whatever works for that person.
Absolutely. And, of course, that night, Margaret Brownlee will be joining us in studio, as will Richard Polinelli. And we're going to have several writers on the phone, and it should be a pretty lively 2 hours. So
that sounds good.
Yeah, and we couldn't do it in 1 hour. We just couldn't do it. So we decided to go for 2 hours. And, of course, the week or the August 24th, we have back with us Craig Johnson, who is the originator of Longmire. So he's going to be back with us. So we got some good stuff coming up this year. The bookie's doing a great job. She's, like,
She's
awesome.
Awesome.
She is awesome. She's
oh,
awesome.
Oh, I wanted to say I love the show that you interview Rosa Latimer.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Harvey House. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I love that show. I listened to it one day while I was walking. I loved it. You know, my grandmother was a Harvey girl and my aunt.
Well,
so
Jerry's
I love
mother
that
was
whole
as
show
well.
On Rosa.
Yeah, Jerry's mother was as well. So, yeah.
Yes, I remember that whole connection.
Yeah.
One day on Facebook, we all made connections. It was so awesome.
Yeah, it's you know, it's like I tell everybody, the older we get, the smaller the world gets.
That is so true.
You know, and it's like the more people you know, you just fall into stuff. And Bobby says all the time, well, God, you've just been everywhere and done everything. No, I haven't. But I've traveled extensively, and I know a lot of people, and I've done a lot of things. So, you know, why not mention
it? And, Jim, we are so grateful. So many writers that I know that have been on your show, thank you for founding the Writer's Block. And Russ, it's been great to have you to be on the show twice, and you're the co-host.
Thank you.
I'm
Isn't
honored
he awesome?
To be on the show. And
well, we love
and
having
I'm, you.
And
I'm, you know, telling other writers to contact the bookie.
Yep.
To get on the show.
Yep. Well, we're booked up now through September, I believe. So I don't think
actually
we...
I heard the other night October.
Oh, maybe. I have to ask the bookie. I don't know. You know. She comes out and she hands me a piece of paper and says, here, read this and see if we want this person. So, I don't know. Anyway, Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us. It's just been a hoot, as it should have been. And we love having you with us.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Jim. Thank you. And Russ, thank you. Thank you for reading Seven Wings to Glory.
Oh, you're
our
very
pleasure.
Welcome.
Really?
You know, we have to read a book a week.
And yes, that's a lot.
And I have some trials coming up. I mean, not trials, but I mean, there's one book that's like 860 pages I got to go through. I don't
I'm
know
not going to be on that show, am I?
No, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but oh well.
Well,
I'll make it.
You know, I'll say this, my next novel, I'm going to do something I've never done. I'm going to go darker and darker.
You are?
So, yes. Maybe a little bit of mystery, maybe a murder.
I love dark. I'd love dark.
Okay. My oldest son is the artist. Is like, Mom, go dark.
There you go. Well, I've got a book that just came out, too, and it's called End of Line.
That's an interesting title.
I think I may send you a copy to see what you think.
All right, that sounds good.
I'll even sign it for you.
All right.
Okay, Kathleen, thank you again for joining us. We got to sign off, but it's been a hoot having you on with us. And
come back
and see us.
Okay, thank you so much, Jim. Oh, thank you, Russ and Jerry. Thank you for booking me.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
It really, truly
have
is our pleasure.
Night.
And have a okay. fun time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Kathleen Rogers. Gosh, it's just a great story.
I know. I can't. Yeah, I was sitting there with a silly grin on my face.
I know, you were.
She's so nice.
I know, and she's
I
so
really
bubbly.
I like listening to her.
And she's just like, woo, 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 woo. And we already got her writer's block thing. So that's what's nice about returning guests is we don't have to ask them that question again.
Yes.
Although
right.
we did last week, and we got the same answer from one, and then Almeda Bradshaw, a musician, was on with us last week, and she had a different take on writer's block. She says, "Well, I don't have to write long things." She says,
right.
"I just 8 stanzas, I'm done."
Sure.
She goes, "But I do get stuck."
And they got to be the right
ones. And they have to be the right ones, and they have to fit the pentameter and the rhythm of the song. So there you go. So, anyway, thanks so much for joining us tonight. This is another rendition of the writer's block, once again in the can. And we'll be back next week. We have an interesting guest next week. Whoops.
As opposed to the ones that aren't?
Actually, she's a little bit different. Her name is Baraka Goetz. She writes children's books. She's got, I think, like 40 or 50 of them out.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm interested to talk to her because she writes them for Jewish children, so that ought to be real interesting. And other than that, Russ, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you. Very big pleasure on my part.
Oh, it's always a pleasure having you with us. And that's it for us. We'll be back next week, Thursday, 7 p.m., right here, LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block.